Hello and welcome, everybody. Our first annual podcast for GC Mag. I'm David Hughes.
I'm Lawrence Hill.
And this is the Hughes and Hill podcast. Number of things to talk about today. First, we're going to talk about the NBA playoffs a little bit. A lot of things going on. The playoffs coming up in about less than a week. Finally, it feels like the season, or the regular season at least, has been dragging on these last couple months. Lawrence, you have a couple storylines you want to talk about going into the playoffs.
Yeah, talk about those Pacers struggling the last six out of lost six of the last eight games going into the playoffs. Everybody's been looking forward to that Heat Pacers rematch because it was such a great series last year. But it's looking like it's a possibility with the Nets emerging, and you got all of these younger teams like Toronto and Washington and Charlotte emerging. They may not make it back to that game, so we'll see how they transition back into the playoffs.
Yeah, I think with Washington and Charlotte, I don't think either are a threat this year necessarily. But you look at Washington going forward, I think a lot of people are excited to see John Wall and Bradley Beal. Their first time in the playoffs. A lot of people think those two can be one of the next great backcourt in the NBA. But an interesting thing with Brooklyn is, okay, if the season ends today, they get Toronto in the first round. I think that'd be a series that everybody would be excited to watch. Toronto with Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, Terrence Ross, Valanciunas. I think a lot of people would be excited to see that series. But since January 1st, the Nets and the Bulls, they have the best records in the Eastern Conference. They're 33-15. They have five guys who average double figures. And that's not including Mirza Teletovic, sharpshooter off the bench, Sean Livingston, who's having somewhat of a career resurgence so far this year. Kevin Garnett averages eight and a half a game. So you have five guys in double figures. He's not one of them. Andre Kirilenko has given them productive minutes off the bench, as has Mason Plumlee. They're a deep team. They don't lose a ton from the first to second unit. And right now, if they can get by Toronto in that first round, which I think might be a long series, they'll get Miami in the second round. And I think it's interesting. Paul Pierce, you know, he's no love lost between him and LeBron James. Him and Kevin Garnett can potentially get one more shot at Miami in that second round. And I think this whole year we're talking about the Eastern Conference playoffs aren't going to be anything until the conference finals. But now all of a sudden you could have a Bulls-Pacers matchup in the second round. That's going to be tough. It's going to be gritty. A lot of people are going to be excited to see that. And then you'll also have the other side, possibly Brooklyn and Miami. So all of a sudden these Eastern Conference playoffs have gotten a bit more interesting.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people were very high on Brooklyn going into the season. I remember they started off struggling, just doing bad. The chemistry was bad and everything like that. And it's good to see that they got back to where a lot of the fans expected them to be in contention, possibly for facing the Heat and potentially beating the Heat since they've swept them like in every matchup that they had in the regular season. But not to look past Toronto, though, with Rudy Gay, he's struggling field goal percentage-wise, but athleticism on the wing, him and DeRozan bring that. Kyle Lowry is a true point. And you got two big guys. You got Valanciunas and Johnson are really anchoring that front line for Toronto. So I expect them to give Brooklyn a little bit of trouble. But as far as that matchup with Pierce and Garnett versus LeBron again, we all know how that went with the Celtics. So I'm sure a lot of NBA fans would root for that considering the hype that they had coming into the season and the history that they have.
I think that'd definitely be a matchup that excites pretty much everybody, every type of NBA fan. You bring up an interesting point about the Eastern Conference. It's been pretty bad basketball for the better half of the year, really. You had a lot of teams who didn't meet expectations. The Cavaliers, they were supposed to be a little bit better. Yeah. The Pistons, of course. The Knicks, I think a lot of people were rooting for the Knicks to get that 8 seed and play Miami.
There's a chance that they can get that 8 seed, though.
Do you know how many games they are out right now?
I think they are out two games.
Two
games behind the Hawks, and the Hawks just won the last game. So
there's only about two games left.
Three games left, so we'll see.
It looks like we'll probably get Miami, Atlanta in that first round. I think that'll be quickly disposed of. But another interesting first round matchup, I think, would be Charlotte and Indiana. Indiana's having trouble beating everybody right now.
Everybody.
They barely beat Milwaukee. They barely beat the Pistons not too long ago.
He goes leaving the Lakers because that's a decision that not a lot of athletes make, you know, leaving L.A. to go to Houston.
And 100% the right decision,
for basketball reasons. I can see that, yeah. But it's going to be interesting to see. It's a new tandem with him and Harden and see what they do in their first playoffs together. You got Damian Lillard and LaMarcus Aldridge. And then you got Golden State again, who was very impressive in the playoffs last year. We're going to see what Steph Curry and Iguodala and all those guys can do this year. Mark Jackson running that show.
I think if that 4-5 matchup stays, I think Houston's going to make quick work of Portland.
Quick work?
I think quick 5-6. I think it's going to be six game max.
I think it'll be six to seven games.
I don't see that one going seven. I think Houston's coming on strong.
We'll see.
Harden and Dwight Howard, that's a legit two superstar.
And the shooting around them, too. You need
They might be a piece away maybe from actually going to the finals and winning it. But I think they definitely have a wonderful core established.
Yeah, a lot of storylines going into the playoffs this year. I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm excited. I've been excited for the Western Conference playoffs for quite some time. And now, like we said, it looks like the East is finally adding some spice to it, too, with the emergence of Brooklyn and Indiana struggling. Emergence of Chicago, too. How about you can't be understated?
Can they score, though, is the thing.
Yeah,
They can play deep, but are they going to score? Who's going to give them the offense against that tough playoff half-court defense? You'll see.
It'll be an interesting – it'll be them in Washington right now, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Yes. Washington. Chicago and Washington. That'll be interesting. But that Chicago and Indiana score – or Indiana series potentially in the next round, you might have some scores that kind of mirror what Indiana and Detroit had back in 2004, that series.
That 80-point range.
Sometimes not even. They were 70. Yeah, there was – I think the block game, I think the Pistons won that one like 69-67.
Yeah.
So I think if you like tough defense – that's going to be definitely one to watch. No one ever going at it.
Yeah.
I mean, Paul, I think the Pacers is a much more talented team if that series does come to fruition. I would take the Pacers. I think Lance, Paul George, I think those five guys will find a way to get it done. But it can't be
I like the way they match up against the Bulls.
Yeah, and it's just old-time Central Division basketball. But I think it can't be understated how good of a job Tom Thibodeau.
Yeah, without Rose again.
And they lost Luol Deng. They're going to win 50 games.
Yeah.
I think, what are they, 47, 48, 32 right now?
Yeah,
they're approaching 50. Yeah, they're 47 and 32 right now, so they got three more games left. But to even be close to 50 games with losing Derrick Rose once again, you trade Luol Deng, and to be approaching 50 games, Joakim Noah has established himself as I can't put him below any center really than Dwight Howard. Al Jefferson might have an argument.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean,
yeah, he gets assists, rebounds, points, defense.
He has led that team and he's really made a strong case.
Well, I got a couple triple doubles this year. I think he got a triple double. No,
I think so. Yeah,
he's
honestly made a strong case for any superstar free agent this summer, potentially Carmelo Anthony. Yeah. Hey, come over and play with me. Even if Derrick Rose is injured. I mean, we won 50, almost 50 games this year.
If Carmelo doesn't get to sneak back into that AC with the Knicks, they are two games out. There's a chance in three games that they can make it.
Outside shot,
yeah. I feel like, though, if they don't make the playoffs, I feel like it's very likely that he could be leaving. But if they do make the playoffs, they have the talent on their roster to mess with a lot of the teams.
I think he really wanted to make it happen in New York. I really do. He's from there.
Mm-hmm.
Syracuse. And he had been longing to go there pretty much for the couple years previous to them trading for him. But – strictly from a basketball perspective, I don't see what reason he would have for staying there.
Yeah.
I think his best move would be to go to somewhere like Chicago. Depending, we'll see what LA does in the lottery. The Lakers are in a really tough spot right now, but they bottomed out very quickly, so they're going to get a good pick this year.
Yeah.
And we'll see if they can get Jabari Parker in Laker gold. Moving on, though, a little bit of a bleaker story. How about the Detroit Pistons? Currently, the story well documented throughout this year.
Joe Dumars reportedly resigned.
He's going to resign. Yeah. Thankfully, expectations were high. We're high, relatively high before the season. I know I was drinking the Pistons Kool-Aid. I was drinking a lot of it. But Josh Smith, as a lot of people predicted, he didn't work out at the three.
They brought in two big faces, though. You brought in you got the three big faces. Like, we had the draft pick with KCP. We had Josh Smith.
KCP
hasn't
contributed much.
Yeah, like, we had those three big names. And you bring in three names like that, like, you get excited. Like, as a Pistons fan, it's disappointing to see how they've struggled all the way, like, near the bottom of the East. And it's been rough to watch.
I felt like when they made those moves and they signed Chauncey, who hasn't been able to contribute, he's pretty much done with. But you kind of felt like there was a sense of relevance again. Like, okay, we got Josh Smith, Brandon Jennings. These are two, say what you will about those guys, but I think those are two legitimate NBA starters. And really the Pistons hadn't had even that
beforehand.
In a couple years previous, but it's crazy. You had Jennings, you had Josh Smith, and they're about to be the same spot pretty much as they were last year, that eighth slot in the NBA draft. And they have a lot of issues other than just being a bad team, really. Fans in the area, no one cares about the Pistons right now.
The Palace is empty.
Palace empty on a nightly basis. I talk to other people, and no one really cares about the Pistons right now. I mean, what do you think? What do you think they need to do to create a buzz? Obviously, drafting Trey Burke would have helped tremendously. Yeah. I think even with
that was a favorite pick for everybody.
Even with the losing, I think Michigan fans would have still been supporting Trey Burke, watching the Pistons
from a marketing standpoint. Yeah, they're struggling with this. Yeah. I think they're at the bottom of the league of attendance. Like if you look at attendance overall,
they're last. Yeah, they've been at or near the bottom. They go from a decade where they're pretty much first every year.
Yeah. Even on the road, people don't come see the Pistons.
Nope. Yeah. And they've been at or near the bottom for the last few years. I think they're at the bottom this year.
Yeah.
So maybe the final two stakes in Joe Dumars' tenure as Pistons GM, you got to look at the signing of Josh Smith. Yeah. Of course, he's not a small don't forward.
That Ben Gordon and Villanueva, that was the first time.
And Tom Gores bought the team, I think, in the spring of 2011. He bought the team, and he kind of gave Dumars one last shot. And Dumars did a nice job, I think, the previous 2 years. He drafted Andre Drummond. He fell into their laps a little bit, but give him credit, he made the selection. Mm-hmm. And then this offseason, he had cap room, had a lottery pick, and it didn't go his way. He made a couple, drastically wrong decisions. I think KCP, I'm not giving up on him just yet. He might not ever be a quality. He might not ever be a quality NBA starter, but I really think his floor as an NBA player is a 3-and-D guy off the bench. I think if he doesn't become that, then it was because he was just extremely lazy.
He got this frame to play D. He got the stroke.
He's long. He's already a solid on-ball defender. Yeah. He's all right around the floor. He just has trouble in the half court finding his own shot, finding his own offense.
He needs to be paired with a point guard that can help create some of that offense for him. Like, you see some of the point guards like Rondo, like, you give him a spot-up shooter like that, those shooters have, like, the best careers, best years of their careers in a situation like that. So, and Brandon Jennings, overall, like, his shot volume got a little high, like, as the season went on. Like he said, he's going to distribute, and when things start breaking down, I mean, no offense being created, Jennings is taking a shot, and he's not an efficient shooter. No. And couple that with Josh Smith inefficient shooting as well. It was just a bad half-court offense to watch, like, for the Pistons, overall this year.
I think it's just a losing culture there right now. I think guys like Greg Monroe, if you watch after the game, I think guys like Greg Monroe, Rodney Stuckey,
they're used to it.
They're just used to losing. Mm-hmm. Greg Monroe walks off the floor pretty nonchalantly, lost again. he doesn't know anything else as an NBA player. Rodney Stuckey, he had his rookie year where they went to the Eastern Conference Finals, but other than that, he pretty much knows losing. And
and a lot of head coaches, too.
Yeah, a lot of different head coaches every year. Michael Curry, then it was Kuster. I didn't think they should have fired Lawrence Frank. I honestly don't think they should have fired Lawrence Frank.
I forgot he was there. Yeah, almost, man.
They gave him 2 years and they fired him. But I thought Lawrence Frank actually the team was horrible last year from a talent perspective. But I thought watching them from night to night, like how effort is kind of a problem this year. Like I never thought like they weren't. It was when they lost. I always thought it was because they just didn't have the talent. They just didn't have the personnel. But I was never frustrated with the effort they were giving or just dumb mistakes. So I thought he really did a good job last year. It was a horrible roster. Yeah. Horrible roster. Didn't even have Andre Drummond for about half the year.
I was disappointed that they weren't able to pull a trade this year, too, with Monroe contract coming up. I feel like they could have maybe pulled a trade for him or something like that, got some value back. Because there's a chance that they may not get him back this year if they decide not to match, move Josh Smith up. So I feel like with the way that the season was going downhill, trades could have been made or some splash could have been made because talent is on the roster. It's just not in the right places right now.
So. Yeah, they're going to have to either part ways with Josh Smith or Greg Monroe. I don't think that's any secret. Josh Smith can't play the three. Those three big men, they just can't coexist on the same floor.
It sounded good, though.
Yeah, it did. I was excited. I was extremely excited. I was looking forward to playoff basketball at the Palace again. Honestly, I thought it was a sure thing. I really did.
On paper.
Then they didn't start out too bad either. I remember they had that big road win in Indiana. They beat Miami in Miami early on. I remember they had a big win in Chicago. So it looked like they were, at worst, they were going to get that 4 or 5 seed, but and things kind of just went downward from there. Moving on, Central Michigan football, they opened spring ball on April 19th. And we're going to talk about Dan Enos a little bit here, the job he's done and the job he needs to do to keep his job. 3-9 in the first two seasons, obviously terrible. It went 7-6 with the bowl win in 2012. That was probably his best season as CMU head coach. He got that big win over Iowa and then the bowl win over Western Kentucky. 6-6 last year. And my biggest issue with him is that he hasn't had any quality wins. Yeah. They won at Ohio this year. Ohio was a bowl team. But other than that Iowa and that Ohio, when I look at the results from the last few years, and I don't see a point where it seems like he's gotten these 7-6, these over 500 or above seasons, just by beating up on sometimes
teams that they're supposed to beat almost.
Yeah, Division II teams, and then the bottom of the barrel of the MAC teams.
Yeah, we need to get a couple in Central. Get a couple MAC victories. Like, you see Northern Illinois, like the MAC overall, the conference, you see a couple teams fluttering at bottom of the top 25 ranking. Like, the MAC overall has a couple good teams in it, and seeing Central Michigan climb towards beating those teams and competing mm-hmm. against those teams would be something that would be nice to see for Enos. And, that bowl win, though, at Ford Field, that was a triumphant moment for Central Michigan.
Created a lot of momentum for the program.
Did get a bowl last year, though.
They lost Ryan Radcliffe. Some people would argue that was a good thing. But I think next year they really have a chance. I looked at Cooper Rush returns next year. They bring back – they lose their Ron Tipton, but they bring back Saylor Lavallee. They bring back Titus Davis, as well as a couple other top receiver. Courtney Williams comes back as well. So next year I think presents an opportunity for them to maybe win 8-9 games, get back into a bowl game.
That would be ideal. That would be good for, for his team.
And then hopefully, compete at or near the top of the MAC for the first time since 2009. I think the last few years after the momentum they had created – under Lefebvre, I think the last four years have been a disappointment for everybody.
Optimism was high, though, after that bowl win and everything. It seemed like, seeing you maybe taking that step. You know, didn't get a bowl. They were bowl eligible last year, didn't get a bowl game. But definitely getting into a bowl, winning 8-9 games would be definitely a big step for Central Michigan. I'm sure that's what the goal is over there.
And I'm a big Michigan State fan, and I was on my way to – I knew I was going to CMU the next year when they did hire Enos. So Enos was big for Michigan State in the recruiting trail, so I was a little unhappy about that. But I thought the Dan Enos hire from Central Michigan, I thought it was going to work out perfectly because he recruits Michigan well.
I agree with that. He was coming
up from under Mark D'Antonio. I thought this was going to be a home run hire. It hasn't worked out that way, though.
I agree with you 100% on that, from Michigan State and everything under D'Antonio. They were doing good. Michigan State, you've seen them kind of climb from not the bottom of the Big Ten, but starting to compete with, like, the top of the Big Ten, Ohio State.
I thought it was a can't-miss hire. I really thought he was going to do well here. It's been a mixed bag, mostly negative, I would say. I think a lot of fans are tired of him. Honestly, I think a lot of people think that, he's had four seasons here, and he's taken them as far as he's going to take them. But they do return pretty much every skill position guy. Next year, Zerlon Tipton, of course, a big loss. But he didn't play most of this year anyway. So they get Saylor Lavallee back. Titus Davis is one, probably a top 20 receiver in the country. I mean, he had over 1,000 yards last year.
Yeah, good receiver.
Yeah, so, and I like Cooper Rush, too. So they do have a chance next year to hopefully make that jump. Okay, that's going to do it for our first podcast on GC Mag. It's the Hughes and Hill podcast. I'm David Hughes.
Lawrence Hill.
And thank you for listening. And we'll see you next time.
See you.